You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Coming up on Total Access, The Locker Room.
I get a call from a very well-known and massively intelligent agent that I have a ton of respect for. I won't bother mentioning his name right now. And he said to me, and Smitty was on the speakerphone, don't effing move.
Welcome to NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. I'm Michael Robinson alongside Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick. Coach, was going down?
Ready to go. Let's go.
Let's go, man. We're going to let you guys in on what players and coaches really talk about inside the locker room. The draft is here, so we wanted to get a GM's point of view, and we got a great guest. Former GM Thomas Dimitroff is joining us, and you guys aren't going to believe some of the stories he has about war room and being able to get his scouts in order. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, and you're going to get some real insights into how that war room works and the interaction between scouts and coaches.
Let's welcome in former executive of the year and one of the best talent evaluators out there, Coach, Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas, welcome to the Total Access Podcast. What's going on, brother?
This was the one I was looking forward to already. I haven't gotten to the back end of this week, but I'm looking forward to talking football with you guys. You guys are so real. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, we try to be. So look, we start every episode off with the locker room story. I know you're a general manager, so you may have, I don't know, war room stories for us, but nothing that we talk about on TV. TV, you know, you can't save us so much on TV, right? But in this podcast, we do keep it all the way 1,000, not 100, 1,000, Thomas, okay? So this is your opportunity to give us your locker room story.
Let's go to the draft room. Let's go 2011. Smitty and I were there, as you know, Brian. We were rolling. We were in a little bit of an extended honeymoon, which we loved. We had some swagger about us, and we decided we were going to do, you know, we're going to do that trade, right? We were going to make that move for Julio Jones. And we both agreed that although crazy, you know, compensation, we were going to do it. And I remember we had it all agreed upon, and Arthur and I were all knotted up. You know, I had to start dressing better. I mean, Brian, before I moved from Boulder, I only had plaids and, you know, boots and everything.
Now you had to get a clip-on right tie and, yeah.
So we were all tied up and everything was proper. Arthur and I, and you know Arthur, he probably comes up to you now. He's just a touchy, huggy guy. And we were arm in arm. We had NFL Network TV on and we had ESPN up. And we were all there. And as you can imagine, this draft room, I got to play it for you. It wasn't like New England when I was there where there were 10 or 12 people. I don't know how you did it, how many you had in Baltimore, where your draft room was,
right,
Brian. But Arthur was, he had dignitaries, man. We had dignitaries. We had limited partners. And then we had all of our scouting staff. We were arm in arm watching. And all of a sudden, there was all this hullabaloo about there's a trade.
Atlanta at number 27 believes they're ready for a Super Bowl. They believe they have to be more electrified, in that division. They got to score better. They got to give Matt Ryan more tools to win. I'm looking for Atlanta to come up here to get Julio Jones, that young man from Alabama, right there to move from 27 to 6.
Wow. We moved, of course, up from 27 to 6, and everyone was wondering what was going to happen, and they announced the Falcons are on the clock, and oh my God, I can't believe, what are they thinking? How could they move up that much? Arthur's smiling and proud as a peacock that he knows what we're going to do. They announce, you know, the Falcons are trading for Julio Jones.
The Cleveland Browns have traded the 6th pick to the Atlanta Falcons. With the 6th pick in the 2011 NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Julio Jones, wide receiver, Alabama.
First thing that happens, and I've never seen this in my life, and I've been around it quite a long time as well, there's John Gruden, and John Gruden proceeds play after play after play. I swear to God, in my imagination maybe, but it was 17 drops in a row. Why are they doing this? And with each drop, Brian, his arm, my arm, and our arms were falling closer to the sides. So eventually we just unlocked arms and we're like...
He's going, what the hell are you doing?
Exactly. And of course, I turned around and had some choice words for John. Since then, we've joked about it a little bit, of course, but I remember that being a really, really stellar moment in the draft room.
Let me jump in, if I may, Thomas. And people are always asking about that draft process. And obviously, it's an incredibly, you know, that movie with Kevin Costner came out on draft day. And for those who saw the movie, they need to know, they took a year's worth of conversations and put it into one day. All the trades and the evaluation, he did that morning and then draft, which obviously doesn't happen. Talk about, particularly we're right now, as we're talking, we're a couple of days away from the draft, a little bit about that process that for you guys, because it is different in terms of the scouts and the coaches and the owner and all the interaction that has to happen to get you to the point like making a trade for Julio Jones.
Well, I think you would agree with this. And Mike, you've been around some really good, you know, organization, i.e. Seattle, and seeing how it's working when, and I'm a big believer in this. You have to be on the same wavelength. The team, the co-team builders, the GM and the head coach and GM, 100% have to be in lockstep. Of course, there's going to be conversations and such, but with each staff, I think it's really important to understand. And it starts, as we all know, the GM and the personnel staff have to sit down with the head coach and his coordinators and his position coaches and truly go through a seminar, like a learning idea, a symposium to really understand what is needed. That is vitally important. If you are at loggerheads and misunderstanding what is needed in certain schemes as a personnel, as a GM and as a personnel department, you are lost. I don't care how good your coaching staff is. I don't care how good your scouting staff is. You know, you're missing. So really, really important at the outset of each season to make sure you're on cue with what is expected and what is needed. And that every year needs to be, I think, refreshed, because there are changes. There may be changes in coordinators. There may be changes in position coaches. The process starts back in the spring, of course. But think about this. And I've always said this, Brian. We started scouting that group for a certain draft 14 months basically ahead. Wow. This was not one where we just kind of finished the season and we jumped into the All-Star season. You know, I believe the really good and sound organizations in scouting, of course, provide a lot of background and a lot of backdrop for their adept coaching staffs. So it's really, really important. A lot of research. It's not just the evaluation guys, as you well know. It's there's a research element to me as a general manager that was vital. If you had a group of personnel men who were gathering the right information and researching properly and providing, again, your coaching staff with really good, sound information, what a great kickoff that is for when the coaches are done their season and they're able to jump into the college scene and free agency, of course, which is important after the season, they're teed up. It's very important to make sure that the coaching staff is teed up. That's such an important part of this process. I have said time and again, and I would say this and stand strong on this, there was never one player that with Smitty and with Dan Quinn that I went against, because I come from a coaching background before my dad got into scouting. I 100% believe if your head coach and you know, his loyal, whoever that is, if it's the coordinator on each side, is not for a certain player, there's no way I would ever want to force and continue to press someone. Sure, you would try to convince if you believed in it strongly. But in the end, Brian, if you as a head coach didn't like a player, I just think, you know, that's for lack of a better word, like it's deleterious to your organization. And especially if you do more than one of those, that can be really, really bad. Develops a bad trust, but it also, there's no way I'd want to sit there and put the organization on the line when your coaching staff isn't behind the player that you want.
Yeah, that's just bad business. That's what it seems like to me. You know what I mean? It's going to seem like there's just going to be a bunch of people going against each other. And I know you don't want conflict within your organization. My question is a kind of a two-parter, and it may sound very generic, but I'm interested in how you put your draft board together, obviously, for each year. And how do you manage that team need versus, oh my goodness, this guy's just a hell of a player. We just can't pass up on him.
So let's start a draft board. And I could go into massive detail and we could spend a whole hour on it. But if I can attempt to break it down a little bit, again, basically, as you all know, we're over the top. We're matched literally, you know, we're matched with our offensive board and our defensive board across the top. And then we obviously stack our players by position vertically, the best grade, of course, on top and the worst grade on the bottom. We basically had a front board of O&D in our situation in Atlanta, a back board who are, you know, more the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders. And then we had a sideboard, which was a lot of free agents that were set up. We were right in our view, but they were to the side, of course. And we were very particular over the months, especially we would set up a general stack of our college draft board in December. Again, understanding that the coaches were still very involved in the process of coaching the football team. So they weren't involved at that point. We were trying to get the board as close to possible, as close to being where we wanted it to be, to kick it off and kick it over to the coaching staff, where we had our second set of meetings in February after the coaches started to become more involved, a lot more involved, of course. That was really important for us. So we started with a light massage, and then as the coaches and the scouts started working together, usually we would have a position coach with one of our scouts, and they would really drill down and really try to massage that board and stack that board to a point where we really got comfortable as an organization by position, by grade, which was really important for us. And, you know, in the very end, we also had a grading scale in Atlanta that was horizontal in the sense of there were certain grades that were higher by certain position, even though it might have still been you had a third corner and a third receiver, but that third corner might be a little bit higher on the draft board than the third corner, just because we felt that that person was much more important, or not much more, or a little bit more important than the other player. So that was something that we spent a lot of time on, and that wasn't always the easiest. And from the outside, people would look at our draft grading scale, which came over from Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli. And we did a lot of morphing of that. That grading scale is probably with, and board setup is probably with seven or eight organizations right now, but everyone has taken it and morphed it and adjusted it to, you know, to the coach and the general manager, which again is the most important thing. In my mind, that the two team builders understand it.
And that was the basis for our board, because as you know, Ozzy worked with Bill Belichick. And I know, like you said, it goes through a lot of iterations. And I viewed, I'm interested in how you handled it. And it obviously was different with the Bill Belichick, who in terms of the setup you had in New England and what you and Mike Smith did. And for those that don't, Mike Smith's my brother-in-law, so kind of a qualifier there. Mike was with me for a long, long time, was in Baltimore, and then went on. Now, the way we would go, and Ozzie, you know, Ozzie Newsome, we all know, is just one of the great general managers in the game. Maybe one of the best listeners I've ever been around. Because at the end of the day, whether it's you or an Ozzie Newsome, you have to take all this information in. And then you got to process it. And I always equate it to that Russell Crowe and A Beautiful Mind. You know, you have all this information and I can just see in your mind that names are coming off the board. But I viewed my job was to kind of stir it up a little bit. I was going to stir it up. I was going to sit during the readings, and I may or may not believe it, but I'm going to turn to a scout or a coach and listen to them read about a player and kind of go, you know, I'm not seeing it, man. You got to I wanted to see their courage or their conviction. And with Ozzy, I would prod him during the course of the weeks leading up to it, just pepper him with some questions. And right about now is when I would get the, you know, we're all married, and you know that look you get from your wife when it's like, yeah. I've had enough.
Yes, no more, coach. That's what
I would get that look, and I go, okay, I'm done stirring. But tell me, because you talk about it being uniform, but there had to be a little creative tension that you and Mike and work through.
Oh no, you're exactly right. And those are fun times when you look back at it, obviously, when no longer the tension exists. Yeah. I mean, the check and balance element of it is so important. I mean, look, there are going to be people on the scouting side who are worried about going against what the general manager thinks, and the same thing on the coaching side. So they may agree. I've always thought, Brian, that it was my business as a general manager, first and foremost, of course, to be, you know, the best evaluator I could be for Smitty and for Dan as two really good head coaches. And I take a lot of pride that we had very good working relationships, because I think it is vital. Also, my very important duty was to know the strengths and the weaknesses of not only the players on the board, but of our scouting staff, of our personnel directors, and of our various scouts. Because there are some, as you well know, hit it out of the park evaluating linebackers, but that same scout, God bless his heart, really struggled when he had to deal with the center or the receiver. Yeah. That was my, especially as the years went on, Brian and Michael, I had to really hone in. And that's something that I took a lot of pride in, knowing where we were going to go and communicate that to Smitty. Like when Smitty might say to me, hey, look, you know, X scout really likes this guy as a receiver. And I might have to be very honest. You know, I wouldn't do it in front of anyone, embarrass anyone. I'd say, remember, you know, he's very good at these positions and great at researching, but we have to remember where he is on this position. So that was important. And I would say the same thing, and I'm sure you would agree with this. You had a really important role as well outside of your coaching to know who your strong evaluators were, you know, as coaches and who were really good on the field and could develop players and scheme. But when it came to evaluating, there were some guys that just didn't have a knack for that. At least that was my experience. And Mike and I, and both Dan and Mike and I, had some really good discussions about that, which I thought were really, really important for organizations to know.
Thomas, talk to us about any real like tension that's been in the war room. I'm sure it comes up. A coach likes to call it that creative fellowship or whatever you want to call it. But talk to us about a time where maybe, you know, it was a scout pounding the desk for a certain player or whatever, and maybe, you know, you or maybe you and the head coach maybe didn't see it the same way, but you had a scout basically saying, no, this has to happen. Has there been any of those types of times in the war room?
You know, our situation might be different, and Brian, I would love to hear your take on it. Ours was, we did a lot of our fighting before we got to the draft room when Arthur was there. We made sure that we had some really pointed conversations with the coaches and the scouts, and I thought it was very productive when we got there on draft day. I will tell you this, and I'm not embarrassed to say it, they knew their place in that draft room. And I would turn to them as both head coaches that I worked with would turn to them and ask them every once in a while about a player, but they had their reports in front of them and they knew what was, you know, what was said. Of course, we would dig into every once in a while, character wise, we would go to a scout, of course, to remind us. We would go to the back of the room and talk to the medical people a little bit, or the athletic performance guy who was evaluating from a different perspective. We would, you know, do a little bit of proper and appropriate spinning around the room. Rarely were there any arguments. If we ever sensed that, we would step out of the room, quite honestly. It was funny. I mean, Mike and I did it, and Dan and I did it. And every once in a while, we thought we'd have some privacy there and we'd be mulling it over, Brian, and there'd be Arthur coming out knocking on the door. Hey,
can I come in?
Yeah.
So, you know, those were fun. But I, you know, look, I remember speaking of tension in the draft room, it wasn't necessarily there. It was after a pick. You guys will get a kick out of this. We were sitting there, and do you guys recall Tack McKinley when he took him a few years ago? Hell of an athlete, could do a lot of great things. Of course, he's had his stuff to deal with, of course. And all of a sudden, he starts dropping these F-bombs.
I made a promise to her. Like I said, I was going to go D1. I was going to get out of Richmond. I was going to get out of Oakland. I was going to live my dream to play in the NFL. And I'm here, man. I completed the promise. That means every thing to me. Excuse my language. Man, find me later, man. Find me later, man. This means everything to me.
You know, I'm sitting there kind of a little similar to the locking of the arms. And I look across the table, and with each one of the F-bombs, I can see Arthur being like, you know, kind of whatever he does with his lip or his mouth. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm holding my phone, right? Because I knew media, you know, it's just stuff was going on. And I hear a ping, and it's like, take care of this now. So I was like, oh, come on, Tack. You got to be. And of course, he was so overridden with emotion, of course, because of his grandmother and such. But it was a tension time for me again.
We used to, as you know, we'd do our readings. And Mike, obviously, that's as you close in on the draft, you sit and you this mind numbing hour after hour of going through all the reports with the scouts and the coaches. And it's just. What I ended up doing, because there's a lot of things you got to do as well as a coach, I had a microphone set up in the draft room that I could listen in my office to the readings, and then I could look at film. If we were talking about a guy, then I could throw some film on and not interrupt the other guys and listen to it that way. And it worked both ways. And occasionally, you know, there'd be a break or whatever, and guys would forget, and guys are going to moan and complain. Oh, I don't know why. And occasionally I'd chip it on, like, God, I'd go, guys, you know, I can hear you, right? And you talk about some people scrambling around now coming out of that room. It was. Was I right with that? There's one, and I think it's very apropos right now, because we're in this coming draft, we're all talking about, you know, the five quarterbacks, where they're going to go, and quarterback position is so pivotal. I want to go back to your time, because I think it's very applicable. You took a Matt Ryan.
With the third pick in the 2008 NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Matt Ryan, quarterback, Boston College.
Okay, and I go back to 2008. Now, two teams passed on Matt Ryan, but two teams that needed a quarterback.
Yep.
Then St. Louis and Miami. Mm-hmm. So obviously they're bored, because as you know, Thomas, I don't care how great a player is. If you've got a franchise quarterback available, that trumps all boards. There is no ranking. I don't care how good the tackle is. I don't care if he's going to be a Hall of Fame defensive end. If you need a quarterback and you think there's – and your board says there's a franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter what the ranking is. So, obviously, the reason I'm saying that is – so, obviously, there are two teams that didn't value Matt Ryan the way you do, and I did. And I remember during that draft – there were some questions as usual. Tell me about that process that you worked through to come to the decision with Mike and all the personnel people that Matt Ryan was the guy to make the third overall pick.
It's a great question. There was so much involved. And let me first say, Brian, and I 100% in the back of my mind, I knew that you were educating Smitty on the quarterback. You had a D coordinator coming in. I thought we were going to have the most kick-ass defense. It's what I always wanted all my life, to have this madman defense. And I realized here I am, who looking at quarterbacks going like, this is how we're going to survive in this business. And Smitty, the same. I'm like, I thought Smitty was going to be pushing back. Who was a D lineman they were talking about us drafting during that? It was a guy from LSU. He didn't work out or pan out. So thank God we were never, ever thinking about that. So you influenced Mike very well. So thank you, because we wouldn't have lasted more than 2 years. Smitty had three coach of the years, as you know. Yeah. I was fortunate to be lauded a couple years as well. But that had a lot to do with a really strong decision. And we spent a lot of time on deciding on quarterback, and a lot of discussions with Arthur, of course, with our coaching staff, with our scouting staff. And like you said, we beat people up, and we look at shortcomings, and we second guess. We do that up and down the line, especially when you're talking about quarterbacks, because you know it's not only, you know, the athleticism, the decision making, the accuracy, the arm strength. There are so many other elements and layers who you're obviously expert in, and you know about that position so well, that we were learning on the fly as neophyte general manager and head coach. But we knew deep down that what we really needed was a guy who was going to have a really sound understanding of the team. He was going to be very smart, of course. We had him up on the board. All of that was great for us. But for me and for Smitty, it was imperative that we had someone that was going to come into that building and take over for, you know, after the Michael Vick debacle,
which was another element.
Mm-hmm. That was another element. There's no way we could have just flailed around and had someone midline coming in to take that position. So it helped precipitate our decision. And again, there's so much involved in that, and I could go on forever. I'm so glad we did. Another story I'd love to share quickly, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking about information recently and where it comes from. And not only, as you know, it doesn't come just from other general managers to me as a general manager, or other head coaches, or your coaching fraternity, you know, Brian, it comes all over. It could come from, let's call it the way it is. We don't like to admit it. Now we're maybe on the media side a little bit. Right. There, we all have media connections. I mean, one that was like people many years ago would just be like taking shots at me right now for saying this, but we were also dealing with a lot of agents, you know, even then. And I remember Smitty and I were in my office, and this was just before the kickoff of the draft, fairly quick. And I don't know if you knew this story or not, but you probably did. Of course, it had to do with Baltimore. But we literally, we get a call and someone tells us, Ozzie's moving up. They're going to hop you. You know, what are you going to do? And I'm sitting there talking to Mike, and to Mike's credit, Mike was tried and true about it. He was like strong and stout about it. And he's like, no, I don't think so. And I said, well, let's take a deep breath here. Let's make sure. You know, I'm trying to play the GM saying, yeah, okay, I get that. But if we get jumped in our first year in this role, this could be devastating, because not only is it the position, but I'm a big believer. You're in that draft room again, back to want, want, want moments. And you're taking someone and you're like completely deflated. There were just a lot of things going through my mind. I get a call from a very well-known and massively intelligent agent that I have a ton of respect for. I won't bother mentioning his name right now. And he said to me, and Smitty was on the speakerphone, don't effing move. And they're rumored to come up. They're not going to do it. They're really strong on it, but it's not going to happen. Don't make that move. Don't hold your water. I could not believe that I heard that from an agent. It wasn't the end all be all, but it gave us that extra little piece of information that we all need during the draft preparation. And it was amazing that it happened to us during a time where, what if we did? We would have given up something. What if we didn't? What if we held back and someone did, you know, trade away, and all of a sudden Matt wasn't with us again? I don't think Smitty and I would have served the years we did.
Man, that's a lot to have to think about as a general manager. I'm glad I sit on this side of the media and I never had your job, Thomas, because it seems like you had a lot to think about, brother. But I'm going to take you here to the social injustice part here. Atlanta has done a great job in the community. I've always been in the community. Arthur Blank has always been in the community and helping out. Now, when I was coming up through the draft, I remember Vince Young and myself actually talking about this at the combine. I was getting asked questions like, hey, you know, talking about my grandmother, you know, asking about, you know, my mother being a single parent, things like that. But yet when we talked to Matt Leinart, he didn't get that same line of questioning. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is that something I always wanted to ask a general manager this? Is that something that is just something that's in the scouts' minds, or is it something that's actively talked about? Do you guys teach scouts actually how to engage the players when they're doing the interviews and things like that? Or do you just rely kind of on their personal skills to get the information that they need?
Well, I think more so lately, of course, you have to walk the proper line. Of course, people need to be very particular about how they're inquiring. You know, we were given mandates from the league over the last few years what to ask and what not to ask. And Brian would completely understand with this, Michael. I mean, years ago, it was a wild, wild west element of asking questions. I mean, my God, some of the questions that were asked, you know, I'm a pretty open-minded liberal person as far as asking questions just, or as far as anything. Yeah. And I was sometimes blown away that we would ask questions as a league. And it started to agitate me more, because I thought we have to be a lot smarter about this. And luckily we did. And it took a little bit of mandating from the league. I think now what happens, just so you know, when I talk about scouts, they're not just evaluators of talent, of course. Research is a big, big part of their job. And when they go out and research through all of their contacts at the schools they are in, and, you know, it could be the coaching staff, it could be the academic people, it could be the support staff, it could be people in town, they're digging up as much information, not bad information. Their goal isn't just to go out there, I need dirt on this guy. Their goal is to go out there and figure as much as possible the total makeup of this individual and see if they are a fit for their team. That's what they are, you know, that's what they're you know, conditioned to believe and to do and to hone in on. And that's their job, part of a big, big part of their job. So when they notice, or, you know, when they pick up different parts of information, or when they, when they're interacting with some of their other scouts, because called the way it is, scouts aren't just in their own world. The Southeastern Scout Group, or the Northwesters. I was a part of the Northwesters, Brian. I mean, I was a young dude when I got out there. And it was you know, there were some great guys, a lot of old guys, and man, they schooled me. You want to talk about, that's a whole other position to talk about and a whole other place on this spectrum to talk about. But we would, you know, you share information in certain ways, not about your draft board, but you're sharing information because you all kind of have each other's backs, because no one wants to lose their job because they didn't have the proper information. I remember I was, this is a crazy situation. I was scouting out west. I was living in Boulder, Colorado, and I was up in UW, and without getting the details about who it was.
Yeah.
And I remember we draft a guy, a linebacker from UW, and I'm thinking, okay, he's a fourth or fifth rounder. I'm thinking, you know, we got a guy could possibly help us. And that, it was a matter of two or three days later, there's this big deal about, you know, arrested for drug trafficking. It was was the worst thing that a scout wants to hear, right? Because you take it so personally. You want to be an expert in your area. You want to have all the information. You want to provide your people with the right. And I was still fairly young in it. I mean, I was an area scout out in the West. And so I get a call the very next morning. Hey, I heard you just got fired. It was just some random media person. Wow. I didn't even know. And I thought, oh, this is not going well. So the reality is, without spinning off on that, is there's so much information that we take personally and we want to present. And sometimes it comes out in questions that you know, that we feel like we have to ask, but we have to be a lot more particular about it, of course. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, thank you. Thank you, Thomas. Good for real. That really did answer. Thank you.
Thomas, I want to ask you before we finish up here and connect with the Matt Ryan, because I think Matt Ryan's been was a phenomenal pick. You're right. It built for you and Mike going forward and the foundation of the organization and changed the whole profile of it. Atlanta has the fourth pick.
Mm.
And there are a lot of quarterbacks there. Give me some insight as to, I'm one that thinks they should not draft a quarterback. I think Matt Ryan still has a lot of playing time left. I think that creates a very dangerous dynamic that it's hard for teams to negotiate. If it's okay, you can look at Patrick Mahomes and they did it behind Alex Smith. Well, Kansas City was a good football team.
Yes, they were.
And you look at Bryce Love, Jordan behind Aaron Rodgers. Well, Green Bay's pretty good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's in a different situation, but you got to have a little bit of eye for future. Talk about how you would be looking that right now. Someone who's very loyal to Matt Ryan, and I'm sure you still think he can play, but would you think about drafting a quarterback and beginning that difficult transition?
Well, you know, you have unbelievably valid points there, and I've gone round and round on those. That said, and respectfully, I sit there and I think about the evolution of that organization and where Matt is and where Matt thrives and where Matt is, you know, showing signs. I still believe, and I want to make this clear, that he can win a Super Bowl. I truly believe that. I believe right pieces around him, utilize him in the right situation. And hopefully Arthur Smith has a really good understanding about how he wants to use him. As you know, when Kyle had him there, moving him and getting him out in the outside zone. And you can talk much more than I can about that, of course. Put him in that spot. I believe he can. I also believe this is where maybe you and I maybe differ a little bit, is when I really hone in on it, I think it's responsible of the organization to truly look and see, yes, there's going to be issues with potentially Matt being in the same room, but hopefully they're never up at four again. And if let's just say Fields is there, if that happens to be the guy, And again, I don't know if you agree with this, but my feeling is there an element of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers? I'm not saying they're the same quarterbacks, and Matt Ryan and Justin Fields, to allow someone to be in that room for a couple years. It seems, you know, theoretically, like that seems smooth. Let Matt win a Super Bowl and let him around for a couple more years. Again, great deal of respect for him. And then have the heir apparent there waiting. Seems easy, right? Not that easy. As well, you know, there's going to be a lot in that situation. As you know, in this city, in Atlanta, you get someone waiting in the wings. And to your point, probably Matt has a tough game.
Yeah.
It's complicated. So
that's my point in that if you want to do that with the 26th pick with Aaron Rodgers, fine. But if you do it with the fourth pick, your starter. Yeah. And so you've put a clock in, and I'm not saying that's the wrong thing to do, because maybe like you did with Mike, let's get my quarterback together at the right time and go forward. But then let Matt Ryan move on. And there'll be a lot of takers. Let him go, because to have him stay there and work that relationship with the fourth pick, that's got disaster written all over it. Doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do. I just don't know how that works with a guy, the value of a Matt Ryan, and how that orchestrates on a team that still has a lot of needs.
I personally, well, if we can continue, I know we're almost finished here.
No, you're good, brother.
That really, really valid point on that. Fourth pick is very different than 20-something. One of the things that I think it would be really important, and you as a former head coach and know it very well with that position, I think it would take a lot of work before. And I'm not a big believer in having a quarterback dictate the running of the organization. I have always had a lot of respect for Matt and have always communicated with him appropriately, as I know Smitty did, and as I know Dan Quinn did. I think it's very important. I think in this situation, I think it would be very important for Arthur Smith, Terry Fontenot, and quite honestly, Arthur Blank, whether anyone wants to agree with that or not. Arthur is looking at this from a long-term perspective as well. And, you know, I am sure knowing Arthur respectfully as well, he is going to make his opinion felt. He's also going to let these guys do their thing, and which he did for Mike and I, of course, when we were picking the quarterback. But there's a lot to it. And I think you have to go through all of those levels before you would ever make that choice. You would, in my mind, you would have to get, as odd as this sounds, Brian, I think you'd have to get, I think I could beat this guy out. I'm here for four more years. Bring it on, because I'm competitive. Now, that's saying one thing, right?
Yeah.
Don't know how it plays out if things get dusty.
Yeah, well, Thomas, brother, thank you for coming by the show, man. We got to have you on again. This was awesome. I learned a lot about how to operate in the war room, and this was awesome, man. That was great perspective. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access, The Locker Room. For more insight with The Locker Room Point of View, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.